sorry.
What is happening over
I'm
there?
I'm sorry. I'm going to go home now.
What's this going to turn into?
It's going to turn into Fine Young Cannibals real quick.
Oh, there's the voice.
It's Cher. I think Cher is singing this.
It's a bit. It's a Cher meets Aaron Neville meets a Gibb.
A Gibb. Just a generic Gibb.
And I think there's just
Aaron Gibb Costello. Yeah.
There's a soupçon of Tim Curry in there a little bit later.
Oh, yeah.
Right there. There's a little Tim Curry there.
Yeah. I didn't make him for you.
I don't know if I ever...
This is
really
awful.
...got into these guys.
No, this is from the Mott collection. I just... There it is.
Randomly
it's
chosen by Liz.
Shelf. Yeah, way to go, Liz.
You're welcome.
Reached a new low.
This is their 12-inch single. Actually, it's the B-side. It's called
Blue.
The A-side is Johnny Come Home, of course.
Of course.
This is 1985 on IRS Records. And interestingly enough, now, this mix of the song, because this is Blue Dance Mix on the B-side, produced by Sergeant Steel, Gift, and Cox. So Sergeant Steel gave me some gift cocks.
All right.
Wow. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Those sound like porno names.
Right?
I don't know if I like this or if I don't.
I bet in an hour when I'm really high before this show's over,
we're gonna end up liking this song.
Just like, yeah, dude, you want to borrow it?
No,
I'll totally borrow that song.
Right? Yeah.
Well, maybe we should just get out of this and start the regular show.
I'm with you on that.
All right, let's get cracking.
Let's
here.
Crack. Oh God!
Release the Kraken.
This is Mitch Perry, and you're listening to the Shabby Road Record Show.
Well, hey, Labba!
Hey, Labba!
Hey, Labba!
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now he was turned to steel in a great magnetic field when he traveled time for the future of all mankind. A.D. Adams, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. I do it for you, people. I do it for the ones I love. Well, once again, we find ourselves down here on the serrated edge of Sunny Slope at the Devil's Draft House and Dance-O-Rama Shabby Road Studios, gearing up for yet another excursion into all things unholy and vinyl. So join us, all you blasphemers and fornicators, especially you fornicators. Welcome to the party. Help yourselves to the complimentary Tide Pods. Let's spin some records, shall we?
That's a great idea, A.D. Adams. Hey, why not come over and hang with us on the old social media pages there? Facebooks, the Twitters, the ShabbyRoadRecordShow.com forum. And check out all the cool videos on our new YouTube channel where we're talking Deep Purple records, talking about Kiss records, Alice Cooper records.
Lord help us.
All kinds of fun stuff over there. And so we appreciate you guys coming by and hanging out with us here. This is episode 163.
Jesus.
Yeah. Wow. We're I had to do some quick math there.
Light
in my
side
head.
Of 200, aren't we?
And never miss a minute of fun. You got to go over to wherever you are listening to us on, whatever, if it's iTunes or if it's Spreaker or Stitcher or iHeartRadio, subscribe. It's free, and you'll never miss out on 1 second of the shabby goodness.
We will just be tugging at your coattails. Let us in. Let us in.
Speaking of doing some tugging, Liz Morgan is running the Woo! Controls over there. What's happening, Liz?
I'm back.
You're back.
I'm back.
How was the weekend? Good?
It was very melodic.
Melodic. Okay.
Yeah. Virtuoso yes, night over at the club. Well, you know who played on Friday night. And,
Friday night.
Of course, Liz and Mark got G-Man and I some passes to go see Carol Pomeroy.
Mm-hmm. Who?
Carol Pomeroy.
Carol?
Palmer.
Pomeroy.
Palmer.
Pomeroy.
It's getting better.
Right.
Yeah. Getting better. That's cool.
Yeah.
How was it? Good?
Oh, yeah. He was good. His band was cool. His
three-piece
band.
I'm believing you.
He had, his handlers were a bit.
His handlers? Like his manager?
Your management, road manager guy. It was kind of, yeah. It was
that's
a little awkward. And,
It was a sit-down event.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Kind of. Sounds
posh.
Yeah, Carl didn't like people to enjoy themselves or touch things.
Oh,
or
even, no smiling.
I don't even think he wanted people there. I think he'd have been happy if he were just paid to set up his gear and play his ELP songs.
Oh, to and nobody.
Just not, and just all those people, just those annoying little people, just why are they here?
Oh, my God.
It was that vibe. It was kind of that vibe.
That's unfortunate.
So, too bad for you, Carl Palmer.
Yeah. Speaking of unfortunate, Liz has with her Sal 5000 back in business. How you doing, Sally?
Hello, darling.
Hi. Hi, what's new in Sal's world? She's a lot bigger. She's a lot heavier, AD. I didn't want to say anything in front of her, but she's bigger now. Are you doing okay over there, Sal?
I am ready.
All right.
I am always ready. I have been ready. I am ready.
Good to have you back.
Does my ass look big in this circuitry?
She's so, new and improved and
she
sassier.
Is very cool looking over there.
A little glow to her, doesn't she?
Yeah, it's a pinkish hue over there glowing. And speaking of nice, new, fancy, cool things that you can get, nameonanything.com, AD.
Well, nameonanything.com, that's right, Ryan McKay, nameonanything.com. They are the guys who can and will put your name, your company's name, your band's logo, or your whatever on fucking anything. From trucker hats to souvenir bats. Custom condoms, not a problem. Your name on life jackets to keep on your boat, or a warm, comfy sweater custom made for your scrote. A tin for your weed stash, your logo on Adele's ass. They'll make it happen, whatever you ask. Your name, your logo, anywhere. Nameonanything.com? Nameonanything.com.
That's right. And today, you'll save 10% if you go over there and do some ordering. Get whatever you need under the sun. Print it up over at nameonanything.com. Tell them Shabby Road sent you and grab that 10% off.
And be prepared to fight.
That's right. That was a very nice Dr. Seuss type of poem there.
Yeah, I've been kind of in a literary mode lately.
Yeah.
Reading a lot. Yeah. Seuss.
Good.
You know, Poe, Seuss.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. The only thing left to do is to draw to see who's going to go first. Who's going to be the first one to pull a record out of the old mystery box there? Liz has the two playing cards. And while she's shuffling them, we want to give a quick shout out to our friend G-Man, who bought some beer for us here at Shabby.
Oh.
Thank you, G-Man. He's a Shabby Award-winning, Enabler Award winning a beer purchaser for us. He went to the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, where you find a frosty mug of beer that says, "Fill the fridge!" exclamation point. And then that money that goes through PayPal gets into Liz's hands. She does three pirouettes, says Punky Meadows backwards, whistles the solo to "The Tower" by Angel, and it just magically turns into honey brown ale.
Man,
it's amazing.
Punky little punky magic never hurt no one.
Right.
No,
so, hey, D, why don't you
I'll take some punky magic?
Why don't you rest comfortably while I pick?
Did I look too comfortable?
You looked
there?
Pretty comfortable over there. How about we do right? I'm feeling right today.
Red.
Oh, it's AD back again.
Well, all right then. This is going to be a blast. I think I'm going to start. Oh man. I'm going to tell you, all three albums, sometimes I have a hard time picking which album. It was easy. I had the albums picked out in no time. But on these three albums in particular, I had a really hard time. One band I'd never heard of, this band I'd never really heard of. And when the album came to me, it was a gift from our friend Barry.
Oh, cool.
He went and saw this band. They just played the other night at the... It was either the Crescent Ballroom or the Hamilton, one of the two in town. And he's like, "You got to come see this band. I've heard of them. I've seen some of their videos." I'm like, I had to do a rehearsal with Otto's band for that show that we did.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, fuck, I wish I could go. I could use the night off. But, I'd been cramming for the gig and I had to put the PA together at the studio for rehearsing. It just turned into a no, sorry, I can't do it. So Barry goes and... he goes to see the show, comes over the next day, goes, "Dude, I got you something." And he brought me two of their albums from their merch.
Wow.
So, one was an EP. They have this band has three records, so to speak, out. An EP, another EP, and then their full length. Now, let's just start about who am I talking about here? Phoenix, Arizona is not the kind of place that you'd think about, like, for a mecca of original rock and roll. As a matter of fact, Phoenix is kind of known, when I moved out here, sort of the place old rockers go to retire and die, you know? The original scene is always pickup bands, you know, or old versions of, you know, the rockers that moved here. I mean, yeah. There's some genuine,
it's a lot of metal here. A
lot of metal, and that's exactly it. So there was a pretty decent metal scene and a once kind of lively underground sort of punk glam scene, but it all kind of died out in the early 2000s once, you know, like Nita's Hideaway, the Emerald Lounge, and, you know, like the, remember the Black and Tan, that illegal speakeasy?
Oh, that place.
So, you know, those are real cogs in the wheel of punk and places that good, solid, non-mainstream underground original bands with real original ideas could go to. And of course that went away, you know, 2002-ish, you know, that kind of day was really gone, and there weren't really a lot of places where you could really do some cool stuff like that. So fast forward to 2013, and according to local lore, which is awesome because now it's only beginning of 2018, so to have lore, quote unquote lore, when your band is barely 4 years old, it's kind of cool. But according to lore, the members of this band met while mid-teens, attending a local chapter of the School of Rock. You know, the Alice, music school?
The Alice Cooper thing different?
There's a place called The Rock. There's a place here called School of Rock. There's a few of them in different cities now. They're franchised.
Gotcha.
So it's like a more of a performance-based lesson thing, I guess, whatever. So that's supposedly where they met. Now, they are four teenage girls who comprised the band. They were all mid-teens when they first started playing together. None of them are still 21 yet. Ryan?
Okay.
I brought Doll Skin.
Doll Skin.
This band is fucking badass, Ryan.
Oh, yeah?
They are absolutely killer. I just loved them. Now, I'm going to maybe go out on a limb. Ryan, they're kind of punk. They're kind of glam. I mean, I would say, okay, if I could describe them, I would say, you know, I would put them sort of the part Runaways, part Veruca Salt,
okay,
part The Donnas, part Girls' School, so they got some metal, they got some, I would say part Go-Go's, because there's some serious pop elements in there.
Cool.
But they just, it's got a punk, the whole thing just is just all awash in punk.
Cool.
And it's really cool, it's really genuine, it's not like this band is good for a bunch of chicks, you know how that phrase gets kicked around a lot?
Yeah.
This band is good. They're
like,
fucking good.
Like Girls' School.
Yeah, like Girls' School. They're not kidding around. The attitude is cool. It's real. And I'm not 100% sure you'll be on board. That's why I'm not sure which pick I wanted to pick. I was going to pick Side One, Track One, which just comes ripping right out. I think you might think it's a little sort of too new punk, like with new with umlauts over it.
Okay.
Like, you know, the sort of the whiny boy punk.
Okay.
But see, I'm not a big fan of that either. Because they're whiny boys.
Yeah.
Like, shut the fuck up, whiny boy. But these are some cute girls, and you kind of, you know, I'm a father. And they're upset, and I wonder, what's wrong, honey, what's wrong? You kind of want to, you know, come here, can I get you, let's go get you some shoes or something. You know, he's just, they're bitching, and like one of the songs, the track one, side one.
You mean this in the most wholesome way, because it's a very slippery slope that you're treading right now?
No, I do, you know what I'm saying.
I know, yeah.
And it's just, they're adorable, and they are, but they're talking about things that bother teenage girls in a rock and roll way, and if you think about the packaging of that, that doesn't happen that often. Yeah. Even Girls' School and the tougher, you know, chick bands are singing about dudes and relationships. These girls are talking about, yes, they're talking about relationships, but they're talking about their other girls. Hey, chicks, what's happening? There's one song in it that's just, I found, I was actually not even interested in playing this song at all. It's a second song on the album, Side One, Track Two, and it's called Daughter. And
don't call me daughter.
Oh God, that any better? God,
not that almighty. One. I hope.
Choke him with a sweater. But so
choke him with a sweater.
It rhymed with better.
Oh, okay, good. Wow, you're in total Dr. Seuss mode.
Yeah, it's like, tell you, man, I've been boning up on my literature lately. You know, classing the joint up. I got cigarillos when I smoke. But so, no, but I mean, there's something about the way they deliver the stuff because of their age. And you go, you know, they're absolutely very, very valid musicians. You know, they're holding their own for good, solid rock and roll.
Uh-huh.
It's got the punk edge. But the last track on the album was an amazing surprise. I was just like, holy shit.
That's called Uninvited?
It is. And it's an Alanis Morissette cover. It's the cover of the Alanis Morissette song.
Oh, isn't
and
that
it
ironic?
Is fucking...
Well, love that song.
Thank you.
It is a brilliant cover, and they start off real haunting, but they start, I mean, it just turns into fucking metal, and that song with a metal twist to it, and not time changes, but feel, like, you know, where it goes
dynamic.
Into harder edge, where it's just chugging along, a lot of kind of, like, you know, dynamic tricks with it, but, listen, I'm not sold on the song. I was gonna because my second band is the First Timer, I'm starting them with a cover song. My initial box was going to be First Timers, but they're all cover songs. I'm not playing any of their songs. So Uninvited was my first pick for this album. But then I listened to this album probably 6 times in the last 2 days. And I just happened to, like, that song Daughter caught my ear. And so I looked up the lyrics. And there aren't many lyrics in this song. I mean, there ain't many lyrics in this tune at all. But they struck me, and it was like, you know, it's a very intimate song, and you can talk about taking things two ways. Certain verses, and again, they're not long, well-written verses. They're jotting, like, a line or two. But you can look into them, like brilliantly, they evoke emotions on a rarely addressed subject in rock and roll, Ryan, which is the relationship between a teenage girl and her mother.
Uh-huh. Oh, cool. Interesting.
That's right? In a hard rock context. And it's a very, I went, well, that's interesting. So I, you know, reading the lyrics now, you know, my ex-wife had a strained relationship with her mother. You know, my daughter in turn has an often tumultuous, great relationship, but an often tumultuous relationship with her mother. And now my daughter is having a daughter of her own in, well, probably now, right? As we speak, right? Oh, here, there it is. Hey, come here, baby. So,
baby,
come here. Say hello to Grandpa. So, you know, again, there are so many songs about anxieties, fears, confusion, growing up. Many are from the male perspective, but if it is from a teenage girl perspective, it's about, you know, even in the old days, about kissing the boy and you know, and all that stuff. So the lyrics deal with kind of a single mother is viewed through the daughter's eyes. Now, there's you know, such a dynamic, so many multifaceted views from that child. At one point, you know, she sees her mother's strength and that how her mother is pulling through in the hard times and fucking amazing how she's making it all work and paying that rent on time and fixing that damn flat. And, you know, his mom's a super mom. She can fucking do anything, you know, and that's, you know, to see that and making the tough decisions. And then there's the give and take of, you know, like, never feeling good enough, you know, for the mom's expectations and mom, you're always bitching at me and I can never do anything right and blah, 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 as a child grows and becomes her own person. So then there's the resentment of having those expectations, you know, because remember, now you're a teenage or you know, teenage girl and your emotions are flip-flopping. So at one point, you know, you resent those expectations, but at the same time, there's sort of that desire to meet those expectations because you know they're out of love, ultimately. You know what I mean? So it's kind of thing. So really the love and the admiration is said through the frustration, which, you know, and you've got a young daughter. So so even though, you know, the mother can be unreasonable, she ultimately realizes that what she's learned was a valuable lesson along the way. Now, real quick, the intro refrain, it just says, she keeps on breathing. That's the main theme to the song, is she keeps on breathing. So verse one, just she's burning cities till they're down in ashes, burning cities till there's nothing left. Now, you can take that two ways. She's kicking ass and taking no names, or she's putting her down. So that meaning changes as the song goes on. So the first pre-chorus, that she goes, it's time to make mama proud, and it's resentful, you know, like... Oh, I got to step up to mom's expectations again. That's first time around. So it kind of feels to me like it's, and I may be wrong. I may be totally misinterpreting this.
Angsty.
Yeah, but it's sort of a negative connotation. She dreads the fact that she can't, oh, mom's scrutinizing me again. Oh, so it says time to make mama proud again. Dance, monkey, dance, right? You know? But then the second time around, there's something turns around in it, and it's definitely positive. Like, okay, mom knows who I am. Time to strap on that guitar. You know, make mama proud. Like, fuck yeah.
Interesting.
Mom's in the front row, digging it. Don't make mama proud.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of cool, man. So it really indicates that ultimately mom allowed her to live that dream and to kind of follow her own path and supports the daughter. And then the chorus, no matter what the world can throw at her, she keeps on breathing.
Okay.
Fucking badass.
Cool. Right? I want to hear this then. I definitely want to hear the original
Yeah,
stuff
so this is dedicated to my daughter, Ashley, and her daughter, who she's about to have, Remy.
Right.
Just remember, girls, keep on breathing.
That's right.
What she keeps on breathing. Why can't I? Why can't I? That's a dude.
That's a great song.
That's a great album. It's Doll Skin from Phoenix, from right here. That album is called Manic Pixie Dream Girl. Came out on EMP label group, which was it's basically Dave Ellefson and some other partners, and he partnered with who is it? Megaforce, I think, and Sony for distribution. So they got themselves a pretty. Fucking good deal going. So
awesome.
Mark my words, Doll Skin. It's going to be, they're going to be big.
All right.
It's going to be a big band.
You heard it here first.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
I like them.
I do too, man.
Okay. I should mention that recently, speaking of that YouTube video channel that we have, one of the videos that I put out was basically a call to arms for all of our listeners to help me choose my mystery boxes for the month of April. So here we are in April, and I did choose one. You can vote, I guess would be the word. I basically had my entire record collection, which is on Discogs, and you can just go through my record collection and pick three records out. And so I've had a bunch of people submit their suggestions, and you can do it on YouTube. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook. Lisa Magnani Malone is this week's lucky winner, and one of the ones that she chose out of my collection on Discogs is this little party. I'm going to keep it sort of empowerment here. I kind of like that theme, so I think I'll go with this one.
Lady power, huh?
It's not so, well, it's everybody power, really. This I got some really good drug stories, though, so we're going to get out of the wholesome environment, and because I brought Sly and the Family Stone. I got the greatest hits selected by Lisa.
Oh.
Here you go.
No. There's not a bad song on this record, man.
It is an essential record, right?
Absolutely. You have to have Sly and the Family Stone.
Then this is, you could basically get this greatest hits and be good to go, right?
Yeah.
Dude.
I know. The picture on the gatefold is amazing. They just, they knew how to dress, right?
Oh.
So this is the greatest hits that came out in November 1970. And I'm going to play the song called Stand.
Oh, yes, you are.
I love that song. Great chord changes in this song. That's what really struck me about the song. It's like it's got a 1 to a 4 minor and then a flat 7. And then it modulates to a totally different key. It does the same thing again in a different key.
Great songwriting, man. They were, I think, highly under. And they put it in 3 minutes and 24 seconds.
Yeah. And then halfway through the song, it just turns into a real heavy groove.
Good jam, yeah.
Yeah, and I love that. Yeah, the drummer.
They go full on funk on that.
The drummer's amazing on this record. So let's talk a little bit here. Bobby Womack, who I believe you told some wild stories about Bobby Womack on the show a while ago.
He could throw a party.
And when he...
They could shoot up a party, too.
...has a quote that talks about how crazy someone else is. He's not the crazy one?
No.
That is a whole other level of crazy.
Oh, that's ten times beyond Leonard Hayes
yes.
crazy.
I used to go over to Sly's place just for the entertainment value. It was crazy. Everything you could think of. Girls, drugs, guns. Completely wackadoo. He even had a zoo. A fucking soul zoo.
A soul?
He had this monkey. Every time I went over, this monkey would climb down and bash his pit bull over the head before jumping back up on the fence. It drove the dog wild. Only this one time, Sly greased up the fence and monkey slid back down. The dog tore the monkey's chest right out in front of us.
Holy fuck.
It was always like that at Sly's. It was like the fall of Rome with afros. Bobby Womack.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was a blizzard of cocaine.
Oh.
Cocaine!
Oh, my God. Apparently, the bassist, Larry Graham, even was rumored to have planned to murder Sly.
Oh, my God. One of us is going to die, Sly. Well, so, of course, he went on to form Graham Central Station.
That's right.
An amazing soul funk band.
But I think this was probably a drug-fueled paranoia that was kicking in there. But it led to some riot at a hotel foyer that year as the two entourages clashed with each other after a concert. So back at the hotel, in the front foyer of the hotel, it was the Camp Graham and Camp Stone
throwing down the lobby, man, right on.
And then the monkey came down all greased up, bopped Sly in the head. So this is this greatest hits thing. The song though, Stand, originally comes from an album of the same name from 1969. So this is the album that came out right before this greatest hits is issued. Released on May 3rd on Epic Records, just before the group's big ass performance at Woodstock, which is one of the greatest moments in that concert for sure, if not ever.
Probably one of some of the greatest live footage of any band anywhere. What, it was two in the morning, Sly comes on?
Yeah, something to take you higher.
People are just done. They're done. They did eat the brown acid, and they're fucked up. And he comes on, Sunday morning at 2 a.m. or Monday morning at 2 a.m., lights up Woodstock. The greatest performance of all of Woodstock. I mean, it's just the highlight of Woodstock for me.
Yeah, if you've never seen that, it's a Want to Take You Higher.
Dude. Oh, shit.
Good God.
And he did more. There's actual more footage of he did, you know, a full set, but there's, I think, 4 or 5 of the songs have been captured either audio or on video.
If you're not getting the greatest hits, I think the Stand album from 69 is the other one you're likely to see because it has a bunch of his big hits. It's got the aforementioned I Want to Take You Higher. It's got Everyday People on it, and the one you played, Sing a Simple Song,
yeah,
which you played last time. They've actually, this is Sly's third appearance on the show here.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing he showed up.
He's not late either. He's right on time.
Right on time.
So let's go ahead and drop a needle on it, man. I can't wait to get into this groove. I love these chords, and I love halfway through the song it just turns into a freaking huge groove.
Yeah.
Love it.
Right on.
So from the Greatest Hits album, let's check it out. Sly and the Family Stone doing Stand.
Things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
A midget standing tall, and the giant beside him about to fall.
It was groovy in here.
Stone, man.
It was groovy in here.
Oh.
More girl power, too. We were talking about his sister on keyboards, and then there's a girl, Cynthia.
Cynthia plays the trumpet also.
Plays the trumpet and does the ad-libs and stuff. And yeah. And, of course, the big drums of Greg. Is it Greg Enrico?
Greg Enrico, yeah.
Yeah. Shit hot, man.
Oh, fucking backbeat for days, just clobbering that snare drum, man. Just like... Crack. Let's get cracking.
No kidding.
Whack.
All right, AD, what you got? Where are you taking us next?
Oh, man, this is big fun no matter how you slice it. I was not too long ago at the record room. Well, back over there and walked in, and they always have that new arrival bin right up front. And I went in there and thumbing through some things, and I found a record. I go, I haven't heard of this. I kind of like the cover. I like the logo. I like the vibe. And I picked it. I like the name of the band, certainly. And so I picked it up, and I looked at it, and I'm going, okay. 1981. Posh Boy Records. Okay, so a Posh Boy is an L.A. label, right? Posh Boy and Bomp were kind of like the sort of the local, L.A. you know, if you couldn't get a major deal with Capitol or whoever, you go, yeah, we signed with Bump, you know, or we signed with Posh Boy or whatever.
Okay.
They're kind of a small indie label, you know, Hollywood-ish. Posh Boy tended to do a little bit more of the metal-y thing, though, and where Bump was more punk related. As a matter of fact, Bump, and the thing but you're going to get some pretty good stuff. I mean, it's not going to be, I'm not going to say they never put it out crap. I mean, I think Bump put out some Charles Manson records once upon a time.
Oh,
so,
my
I mean,
God.
It's not automatically going to be awesome. So,
oh my God.
You know, but now this band, you know, you don't think of punk being a hotbed for power pop or punk in the late 70s, early 80s in LA County.
Uh-huh.
You know, that would be between Los Angeles, city of Los Angeles, you know, and the coast. And, you know, as far east as like Riverside, you know, when you're cutting through the mountains there, Riverside and San Bernardino.
Yeah.
And that area, which they call the Inland Empire, right? So the two were kind of separated, where the Inland, you know, Empire, so to speak, was more punk, had the skate punk things. L.A., remember, at the late 70s, here comes Van Halen. So here comes, you know, the Sunset Strip scene. I mean, that's all forming. So this band is kind of doing punk, and punk is dead. Even the Dolls prove that, you know what I mean? Right? You know what I mean? So even Iggy went kind of disco, and so did Blondie. And so, but these guys were kind of hardcore. And I listened to this guy when I first put, I'd never heard of it. So I bought it. It was $5, $6.
Hmm.
And I put it on, and initially there's this guitar tone on side one, track one. And I'm going, oh, no, it's a little too new wavy.
Oh,
and,
no.
And, yeah, and then the guy starts singing, and it's a little bit like this, but not totally.
It's one of those guys.
And I'm going, oh, you're losing me.
No,
and
bring it back.
And then something happened, and he kind of changed the tone of his voice for, like, the pre-chorus. And the guitar kicked in cool, and I'm like, yeah, like, this is fucking cool.
Ooh.
And it's, dude, his voice throughout the whole record kind of reminds me of Jesse Malin of Degeneration, who, now remember, this band was only around from 77 to 83. I brought in their one and only album that came in out at in 81. So this is well between, or well before Degeneration was tooling around doing anything.
Oh, yeah,
so,
that's another decade.
Yeah, so this is weird because, you know, you think Degeneration is like, oh, that whole scene was cool. These guys were doing it in L.A. on, you know, in the Inland Empire, so to speak, but also on the Sunset Strip, because these guys were just rock and roll enough where people kind of dug them. They're a little four-piece band.
Cool.
The two guitar, bass, and drum. The main guy is a guy named Steve Jones, not that Steve Jones.
Right.
From the Pistols. But so these guys, but they were always kind of like, well, first of all, out wrong place, wrong time, you would think, to get a record deal with that genre. And they're true to the punk thing. I mean, they're true punk rockers, but they had a kind of a metal edge to them. So they could play on the strip and open up for the up-and-coming bands. And you know, people dug them. They didn't boom off the stage or beat them up because they were too punk. But they could play inland, too, as far like east as like, let's say, Palm Springs. And the skate punk dudes would dig them, too. So it's kind of cool.
Hmm.
So, but as far as the big deal goes, just not what they're looking for at the time. They were looking for the Van Halens and the Poisons and the Motley Crues and all that stuff, right? I mean, so they're like, fuck. But I'm telling you what, you put these guys, you snap your fingers and do a little time travel thing, and you put them in Cleveland or Detroit or New York City in 72, 73, dude, these guys could easily hang with the, you know, or even later, you know, like with the Television and the Dolls and the Ramones and the Dead Boys and the Iggy's and all that. So they got the taste of the Ramones in here. So it's got this kind of real punk cool thing to it. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Hollywood Brats.
Oh, the Hollywood Brats.
Now,
cool.
The Hollywood Brats. Now, this is not who this is. I have brought Stepmothers. Ryan.
Stepmothers.
What?
Stepmothers. This is the, cool. Like I said, they're one and only. This album's called You Were Never My Age, which I loved. Funny. I love that album title. So, but it's all great punk rock. Dude, I'm telling you, this is Degeneration. It's got Degeneration's edge. The Hollywood Brat swagger, kind of Dictators-ish, throw in some Ramones, some of the up-tempo Clash stuff, and these guys even dip into the Dolls' sort of girl group fascination, too, on some tracks. You know what? Two words. This is a great fucking record.
I don't know how many words.
That was a lot more than two.
It's two words, right? I'm telling you,
the
this
Hollywood
is...
Brats, by the way, just for anyone that may not be familiar with them, and they're an England band from England, and they were very Dolls.
Very much so.
Around the same time.
Yeah, and it was kind of cool that they
one
had...
One and done record, I think. Too.
And it's just a really cool comparison to the Hollywood Brats and what these guys are doing, too. There's one song in particular on the Hollywood Brats record. They do a remake, speaking of the Dolls getting into the girl group stuff,
they
do a remake of the old song, The Crystals, And Then He Kissed Me.
Yeah.
And it was, 63, I think, came out.
Yeah. Kiss did it as Then She Kissed Me, but Bratz did not change the gender.
They didn't change. So it's like, yeah, dude singing And Then He Kissed Me. It was scandalous, right?
Scandalous. And they're just like the Dolls, like women. You know?
So this whole album rocks balls, right? This whole record rocks balls. And I want to play so many good songs on this. I could play, this would be two side boob episodes, this whole record. But I had to choose one. And so what I did, they closed the album with a cover song, Ryan. And again, it's a song that was originally written or sung by a woman. It was a big hit. And it's a little song written by Jay Lance or Don Black and Mark London called To Sir With Love, Ryan.
Oh, really?
So they don't change any words either. It's got the same cigarette and whiskey swagger that that the Hollywood Brats have with And Then He Kissed Me. So they're singing an ode to their favorite male teacher, and he just loves him. And he's probably singing about how it's like to be growing up a young girl with crayons and having a crush. And it is fantastic.
Awesome.
So here it is, Shabby Academy song, quite unlucky, unlike you've ever heard it before. The innocent young vocal stylings of Steve Jones and Stepmothers with a drunken swaggering version of To Sir With Love. You're going to love this, man. It's side two, track six, man.
Thank you.
How well, great is that?
I like that. That was cool. I mean, it was punky and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, in the famous fuck it all tradition of punk rock, it was the actually that was the title track to the 1967 movie starring Sidney Poitier, big, huge, I think Academy Award winning film with Lulu, who was a young teenage ingenue who sang the title track and had a huge hit single with it.
Yeah.
And
it's my vote for record of the year.
Yeah.
Really? You liked it that much?
I did.
It was great. Cool. I'd say it's on the list for sure. I was amazed. And the thing is, when I saw the album, I couldn't read because it's kind of worn out. So it was a surprise at the end of the album. I didn't know that the song was in. I'm like, are you kidding? So yeah. So, and also this was the film that, of course, Michael DeBar was in and played a bit role, not a bit role, kind of co-starring or a side role in it, but a very much visible thing. So that was Stepmothers from 1981 from the album, their only album, You Were Never My Age, Ryan.
Love it.
On Posh Boy not Records yet. And Tapes, right? Yeah, To Sir With Love. That's good shit, though. Do you like that?
It's
good.
I did. I really
like
that.
It's cool. It's awesome.
Definitely.
What you got, right?
All right.
Oh, you know what? Are we going to do a t-shirt giveaway? People are running around there half naked.
Let's do it. Cue the music there. Ah, here come the beboobed cheerleaders with their t-shirt cannons. Yes, all throughout this first part of the year, we've been giving away free Shabby Road Record Show t-shirts to people that have left iTunes reviews for us, written iTunes reviews. So who is the lucky winner this week, Liz Morgan?
Tonight's winner is Mark Anthony Kay from Canada.
Hey, Mark Anthony Kay, all the way from Canada. I know that guy.
He doesn't need a shirt. It's warm up there, out there to the west. Tropical breezes and all.
And he says, hey guys, longtime listener of the show. I listen every week and get a great laugh listening to your episodes. You guys have also turned me on to a few bands that I haven't checked out before. So thank you for that. Keep up the great work.
Wow.
Awesome.
Thank you for the nice letter and thank you for listening, Mark.
Yeah, he also is a frequent guest on the Kiss FAQ podcast and the Yes Music podcast, another great one. And he is the mastermind behind the band Project Gemini. Mm. So shout out to Mark, man. Good guy. Good
fantastic
dude.
Fantastic band.
Congratulations.
Pick up their new record, by the way.
Project Gemini, yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's good stuff. And so Mark, just get in touch with me and let me know your shirt size and where your address is, and I'll be glad to get that sent off right away. All right, moving on. My box, again, presented by Lisa Malone. She selected three records from my collection.
Good job on the first selection there, Lisa.
And I'm going to say a darn good job on the second selection as well. Because
all right.
This band has only been on the show once. I was thinking I brought them a second time, but no, just once. And that band is Steely Dan.
Oh!
We go from a punk band to Steely Dan.
Well, we had me and Greg Fox had a big Steely Dan marathon conversation down by the pool in Florida.
What a great day that was.
Yeah.
Drinks were flowing. Steely Dan was playing.
God, all day.
All day long. Yeah, that's always a good time. The album that Lisa suggested was Katie Lied from March 1975 on ABC Records. I'm going to play a track that's maybe one of my favorite Steely Dan songs, certainly maybe their best chorus ever written. It's Bad Sneakers. I love, love Bad Sneakers. So this is their first album after the core group that they use on the first few records broke up. And so this is where they're using a lot of the session musicians at this point. I mean, they were using session players back on the previous album as well, but here we're full on.
Becker
just
and Fagan,
all,
yeah.
Yeah. The people that you're going to hear are Michael McDonald,
and Roy,
Yama Peter. Jeff Porcaro turns up. Hal Blaine is on this record.
Oh, you bet he is. He's on every record.
Larry.
he's on that Dollskin album.
He's on the Stepmothers.
Yeah, he's on the Stepmothers record.
Larry Carlton joins in the fracas playing some lead guitar. I kind of like his playing there and some of the Steely Dan stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about his solo work, but certainly.
It's chicken pickin'y. He's got the.
Yeah. So band leaders Becker and Fagan were unhappy with the sound quality of this record because of what they claim to be an equipment malfunction with the then new DBX noise reduction system.
Oh, God. God.
Which, can you explain what that is? It basically filters out the...
It's essentially an equalizer. It's not a magical box. No. It is not a magical box like people think it is. It reduces...
I have a magical box.
Oh, you and Beyonce.
Beyonce
yeah.
does.
Oh, right. it's essentially tape noise reduction, the tape hiss,
mm-hmm.
where the tape is rolling across the tape head and there's a natural hiss. Well, those hisses are merely frequencies being... generated, just yeah. much like any instrument or any voice.
Yeah.
It's just it's generating at the tape rather than through a microphone before it gets to the tape.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's essentially a high-end de-esser EQ.
Yeah, it really just rolls off a lot of the high-end to eliminate the high-frequency hiss there.
Yeah, I never liked them. See, a lot of people...
I never liked them either.
A lot of people use them on the recording stage. I'd say put nothing on the recording stage.
Right.
Nothing. Then you can always take stuff out if you have to.
Because then you're married to it no matter what. I mean, the take itself could be marred by some sort of malfunction here, what happened according to Becker and Fagan.
They were gearheads. They were all brainy. Oh, the new gear, the new Synclavia. We must get one.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, they apparently say that the damage was mostly repaired after consulting with the engineers over at DBX. I'm not sure what they did to undo this sort of catastrophe, but... Nevertheless, Fagan and Becker still refuse to listen to this album ever. No, shan't.
Didn't make them enough millions, I suppose.
No, they might be a little too anal sometimes, these guys. To me, this is the golden period of Steely Dan. This album and its follow-up, The Royal Scam, are probably the two best albums in their catalog. After that, they got a little too... little too clean, little too safe, right? I mean, it's so yacht rocky by the end of it.
I think they were on coke and just bored. They didn't know what else to do.
Yeah. Well, they're the ones that had the mixing console with a mirror built in to do their coke from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cocaine! Oh, yeah.
I'm sure Sly loved to record there.
Yeah. Hey, let's go record them Steely Dans.
All right. Well, so Bad Sneakers and a Pina Colada, my friend, stomping on the avenue by Radio City with a transistor and a large sum of money to spend.
Their lyrics.
I love their lyrics.
Dude, it's all about like drug runners and running from
pimps
the law. I mean, their sound is so innocent, so yacht rocky in a way.
Right. But if you listen to their lyrics, they're like, what the? Wow, is this song about...
like jacking somebody for some cash or some drug money or like, yeah. whatever? Like,
yeah, it's got Black Friday is a hit on here. Daddy Don't Live in New York City No More. What's that one? That's a really good one, too. I love that. Again, dark.
Yeah.
Dark lyric there. Rose Darling. There's some good stuff. Side one's really solid on this record. Side two is a little hit and miss, but a darn good record. And these Steely Dan records, too, like, man, they're like $4.
Yeah,
they sold a lot of them.
They sure fucking did.
Yeah, man. So let's do this. Let's drop the needle on it. Side one, track two, if I'm not mistaken, Bad Sneakers. Love this chorus, man. Can't get enough of it. Also, great guitar solo, and I believe it's Larry Carlton.
And mine, and one more chip who isn't here. I can see the ladies talking how the times are getting hard, and that fearsome excavation on Magnolia Boulevard. Yes, I'm going insane, and I'm laughing at the frozen rain. Well, I'm so alone, honey. When they gonna send me? Tuxedo, how you gonna beat the heat? Do you take me for a fool? Do you think that I don't see that ditch out in the valley that they're digging just for me? Yes, I'm
gone insane.
You know I'm laughing at the frozen rain.
Yeah.
I feel like a song.
Love that track. And we were just talking about how you can just get into a kick of listening to about four Steely Dan records in a row.
Yeah.
On a Sunday afternoon, you know.
They're so unique. I mean, what do you put on after them? Dolls? Or, like, what do you, you know, how do you snap that Dan, huh? How do you snap the Steely?
How do you snap that Dan?
You know, I mean.
Well, we're about to find out, AD, because you got to pick a record out of your mystery box now.
Oh, I sure do. Things are about to get silly here. It's been more than a year since the artist, I'm shaking my box here in a second as soon as I find, pick it up here. Since the artist featured in my box has taken a ride on the old Morgan Fisher. This will be actually the second episode that this artist appeared on, but actually will be the third spin because I played this artist twice on one episode.
Oh, that would have to be.
There has been a recent, Ryan, there's been a recent rash of appearances by Cher, of course, and then with the mention of Adele earlier in my opening, or my, I believe it was my nameonanything.com poem there, rap, if you will.
Yes.
And also my aforementioned Lulu earlier. There seems to be the One Named Wonder effect going on, and I can't think of a better time for the return of our favorite lesbian folk singer.
Frank. It's pronounced Frank, right?
But it's pronounced Frank.
Frank is better.
It's P-H-R-A-N-C.
You found a different Frank record.
I have two Frank albums and an EP. I'm a fanboy.
Oh my God.
I love her. She
I love her.
I do. I fucking, there's something about her.
Listen, I lost it a spit take.
I think
all over Sal.
Liquor just came out her nose. And I'm not even kidding there. I think fair. Take a look at that. Come on. Now for those of you who haven't heard the episode, it was literally a year ago. Our friend Steve Seaborg was down here making a little visit down to some friends and to come in to do the show with us. And so it was episode 119 called Swedes Don't Yodel. And we went crate digging before we did the episode. So we went to the local record store and Steve was kind of chuckling over there and giggling a little bit. And he found the first... Well, the actually, it's the second. This is her debut album.
This is, okay.
But he found one that he's kind of chuckling. He walks over and he goes, "You have to buy this album. If you don't, I'm buying it for you." And he hands it to me. And it featured a very thin person in a red long sleeve turtleneck sweater with sort of a 1960s army style flat top haircut posing in front of a sort of a softened blue and pink floral backdrop, right? Like sort of an old Sears family
it
portrait.
It looked like it could have been a Christmas album.
Right, right, exactly.
It had this very frosted
glow to it and fuzzy. Yeah. The focus was a little soft.
Like, what am I looking at?
And there was a very sexually ambiguous person on the album cover, sort of gazing past the camera while sitting at an AstroTurf-covered table and holding a glass of milk. And so we're just going, what the fuck is this? And it's also called I Enjoy Being a Girl. With titles like Take Off Your Swastika, Toy Time, and of course, the one that I played was M-A-R-T-I-N-A, which is a love song to Martina Navratilova.
That's right, yes.
So I did buy it, and we had a blast with it, and I truly fell in love with it. Now, don't forget that along that with the other song, Martina, or M-A-R-T-I-N-A, Esther, the song... Oh, fucking, about her grandmother.
Yeah, that was a good, very,
you know, being sick.
Touching and, song, yeah.
Yeah, so, something, Esther was her grandma's name. I can't remember the name of it. Miriam and Esther, that was it. Miriam and Esther. And it was a beautiful, beautiful song. So I was intrigued by that because that really was a powerful tune. But most of her stuff is just silly. Mm-hmm. It's just silly and goofy and honest. So she doesn't claim to be a great writer. Her words are sometimes almost scrawled like a third grader would. Her phrasing is untrained and
don't oversell it.
No, but there's something honest about it. And she tells her story the way she wants to tell it. And of course, you've heard that, you know, the term like, you know, three chords in the truth. Fucking Frank uses like one or two chords and that's about it. There's her truth right there. So I'm so intrigued by her that I found another 10-inch EP by her, went back to the same store a few weeks later and found this, her debut. The album is called Folk Singer. And it came out in 1985 on Rhino Records, produced by Frank, Ethan James, and Craig Lee. All right. Now, again, I'm running into what do I play? This whole album is just silliness. Now, one song, oh God, one song, she's in her usual candor, takes on such issues of as corrupt politicians. We could listen to a song about two different songs. Dishonest authors. One's called Liar, Liar. That article you wrote, you're liar, but I don't know what it was. But then she goes on to like talking about somebody from Watergate in the Washington Post. She sings about murders, the girl she has a crush on, her favorite lesbian sports heroes, where she again twice name checks Martina Navratilova.
Wow, she's really got a thing for her.
She has a song, yeah, the not-so-dumb hairdresser down the street, the unauthorized asshole who parks in handicapped parking spots. She has a song about female mud wrestling, which we should listen to.
I'm kind of leaning towards that one.
And a song about the Pope. Now, she loves the Pope.
She does.
She hates female mud wrestling.
Oh.
Okay.
Which I... So she's...
Okay.
Right? I mean, so...
She's complicated.
Again, yeah. She's... You know, there's more to Franck than meets the eye. It's more to her than just a flat top, Ryan.
Okay.
And, of course, that is her trademark, is her... She dresses like a sort of a dude and wears an army flat top. So, all right, listen. I had picked out one called Amazons, in which she basically lists all her favorite female lesbian sports heroes, like bowling and archery and, of course, tennis and things. And she just basically lists them and says what she does, what they do, and how,
is
you know.
Is this like the shopping song?
It's pretty much, yes. And then there was another one in there called, was it called Comic Book, I believe it was.
Okay.
Where the Pope calls Frank and says, you know, we should make a comic book about me. Maybe, what do you think? And she goes, all right, I'll call Stan Lee. And so they do, and there's a comic book about the Pope.
Okay.
So there's that one. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
It's a short little number, probably minute 58, 2 minutes. Then, then there's female mud wrestling. And that's basically her just saying, I don't like female mud wrestling. And that's probably the most fun. It's also the most silly.
Okay.
So... I'll let you guys decide. What do you think?
Mud wrestling.
You want to go with the mud wrestling? Okay. Listen, I like mud wrestling. I think you all like mud wrestling, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, hearing all her silliness, then I guess it's mud wrestling. Then
yes.
All right. Okay. Is our favorite lesbian folk singer Frank from her debut album Folk Singer 1985 on Rhino Records? Let's play. Female mud wrestling, Ryan, I believe. God, now
side
makes it,
one, track six.
Yeah, it might be the last. Yeah, I think it's the last song, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, here we go.
All right, here we go.
When I walk down the street, it's right there in front of me. It's a great big poster on the telephone pole, and it says female mud wrestling. Ooh. Female mud wrestling. Female mud wrestling. When I turn on my TV, there's always a segment that offends me, and that's the one on female mud wrestling. Ooh, female mud wrestling. Female mud wrestling. I'm not like Stephen Melody. I don't like female mud wrestling. I'm not like Stephen Melody. I don't like female mud wrestling. Female mud wrestling. Female mud wrestling. I don't like female mud wrestling. All right, audience, here comes your part. When I say, I don't like female mud wrestling, you say, she doesn't like female mud wrestling. All right, let's try it. I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling. Cause it's stupid, it's embarrassing. I don't like female mud wrestling. It's stupid, it's embarrassing. I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling. All together now. I don't like female mud wrestling. Down with Chippendales and all those types of places.
Right on.
It was Sly.
Yeah, that was Sly and the Family Stone back there.
Yeah. So, female mud wrestling.
I'm not quite sure what her stance is on that. She didn't make it clear if she likes it or not.
Well, help me out with this then. Sing along, if you will. She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
She don't like female mud wrestling.
You get it now.
Not wrestling.
Wrestling. Wrestling. Wrestling. Wrestling.
Yes. Who sang along? I did.
I did. We all did. I think it was kind of contagious. That was ding 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 ding.
I feel like she may have written that on the fly.
Yes. Frank or Frank, Phranc, our favorite female lesbian folk singer.
Yeah.
Will not catch her in a mud wrestling pit.
No.
For all the tea in China.
No, you apparently. Will not.
So that was from her debut album, Folk Singer, came out in 85 on Rhino Records. Thank you, Rhino Records, for making her records. I love her.
Kind of glad they're out there.
They are. I mean, it's just good fun. Pick them
right.
up.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and pull the...
And clean up my mess? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm going to play a record that is... pure pop goodness. It's epic. It's gothic. It's operatic. It's silly. And it's appealing because of all of those things all thrown into a blender.
Excellent.
From 1977.
That's 2 years.
When I've had a lot of responses on the Pick My Mystery Box For Me thread. Again, you can see it at the YouTube page or the Facebook or the Twitter. This record came up a couple times. And I'm like, huh, yeah, we never played it. It's a classic, and I freaking love it. Yeah, it could fall into the category of a guilty pleasure, maybe, because, well, it's Meatloaf, Bat Out of Hell.
Ah,
it's a classic.
The loaf of meat. Meatloaf again. What's for dinner? Meatloaf again.
So I have always loved this record since, probably high school, maybe. I think it's probably when I...
Jim Steinman in here.
Jim Steinman and Meatloaf on the back cover there with the girl.
And of course, Meat's got his hand on her ass while she's making out with Steinman.
Meatloaf got his name from an insult that his high school football coach called him.
Hey,
because
Meatloaf.
Of his weight. Yeah.
Hey, Meatloaf. Better than airbag.
Yeah, true. 43 million copies sold.
Of this record?
Yes.
Jesus.
Worldwide.
What sold more? Maybe Bad?
Meatloaf?
Maybe...
Dead Ringer?
Yeah.
The follow-up? No,
Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon?
Yeah, I read some stat, and it was kind of confusing. I had to read it a couple times, but it was like, okay. It's like they were saying that it's a big record in England. It actually broke in England before it broke here in the States.
That's right. I remember that.
And it was in the charts for so long. And I think it's like the longest running record to reach the top 200 records in England. And it's like still there.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It was like this incredible stat. Like there's only one other record that's been there longer. It must be Dark Side of the Moon or something.
Or Monarchs 45.
Yeah. Frank.
Frank,
yeah.
Rocky R.
Rocky Bloody R.
Right. So so Meat starts out in bands in the 60s, and he took a role in the musical Hair. Hair.
His country version is Hair.
I think it was, I don't know if it was the country version, Hair. I think it might have just been Hair.
Oh.
But later he landed a record deal where... there's it's a weird project where it's like, Meatloaf and Stoney and Meatloaf on Rare Earth Records. And Stoney is this girl that was also in Hair with him. Yeah. So, and I listened to a little bit of it today. You can go on YouTube and check it out. It's okay. Kind of R&B, heavier R&B kind of stuff with Meatloaf singing. And
okay. Now remember the last scene of Hair. The cast was naked. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Scary. Scary Harry.
Work with me on this.
Are you thinking?
Meatloaf naked.
Yeah, so meatloaf's meat?
Meat loafing.
You had to put his meat's loafing. My brain.
But he meets Jim Steinman, who is, of course, the songwriter here of all of this stuff when he's auditioning for another play in 72. And Jim Steinman played a song for Meatloaf from the Stoney and Meatloaf album. That's one of the, he chose one of their tracks. He liked that album.
Oh, no kidding.
So he's like, oh, I love this song. And he's playing, he played and sang the song back to Meatloaf with one of his own.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, that album didn't go anywhere. But yeah, it was, Jim Steinman liked it. So they form a friendship. They start writing songs. And that's going back to like 72. It took them a while to get this project recorded and to find a record deal and stuff. And also Meatloaf was doing other things. He's in the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
He was, yeah, he was kind of more acting as well, musical theater.
He was a musical theater, the Rocky Horror Show, and then he did the film adaptation as well. He also jumped in on Ted Nugent's Free For All album, if you recall.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yes, he did.
And he was an understudy for John Belushi on the touring National Lampoon thing.
Oh, because that was very musical. And
right.
He did a Joe Cocker thing.
Yeah, Belushi did.
Yeah, they were doing the Lemmings and all that, like, which is a sort of a musical adaptation of spoof on Woodstock.
Yes.
Or something.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that National Lampoon stuff is cool. There's a great film on Netflix about it. What is it called? Oh, man, I can't remember.
Called
it.
National Lampoon Flick.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's really good.
By Netflix.
Yeah. There's actually a movie, and then there's a documentary about the same kind of thing. But good stuff. But this is where that National Lampoon thing is where he meets Ellen Foley, who is the singer that is on Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Mm-hmm. And So getting back to them trying to land a record deal with this stuff, their manager jokes that they got turned down by so many record companies that he believes that they were just forming record companies just so they could reject the Meatloaf project. I'm starting a label just to turn these fuckers down.
You know, it hasn't called yet.
One of my favorite stories, Clive Davis over at CBS listens to their demo and stuff and is just yelling at Jim Steinman. Do you even know how to write a song?
Oh, my God.
Do you know anything about writing? If you're going to write for records, it goes like this. A, B, C, B, C. I don't know what you're doing. You're doing like A, D, F, G, B, C. You don't know how to write a song. Have you ever listened to pop music? Have you ever heard any rock and roll music at all? You should go downstairs, and when you leave here, buy some fucking records.
Oh, my God.
Clive Davis.
You know what? Because he wants to sell more of those records.
So Meatloaf yells, "Fuck you, Clive," and then they're hoisted out on their petards after that.
Well, good for them, I say.
But one man who did kind of hear about this and checked it out and said, "I need to produce that record. I love what's happening," and that, of course,
Father Yod
is. Good old Father Yod.
No, no. Am I wrong about that?
No, one Todd Rundgren.
He's kind of Father Yod-y in a way.
That's true. He got the ego. So he was extremely interested in producing this record because he thought that it was hilarious. He thought that Jim Steinman was taking a piss on Bruce Springsteen, and he felt like it was a parody. He's like, I totally want to do this. I'm totally in on the joke. So kind of interesting. Now, what's cool, like last week I played Utopia, you know, Todd Rundgren's Utopia. And the personnel on this record is that band. You got your Kazim.
I did
not know. You got your
Willie
Wilcox.
I did not know that.
Yeah, you got your Roger Powell playing keyboards on it. There's a bunch of musicians, but one of the core bands is Todd's Utopia band.
I should know that.
I didn't know it either. I knew Todd produced it. And Todd's playing like the ripping guitar solos
and
stuff. All
right, everybody who's listening right now who thinks we're dummies, raise your hand.
I'm raising my hand. Liz, put your hand down.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I raised my hand.
So I really struggled on what to choose from this record. Everybody knows the record. It sold 43 million. So
God almighty. I have five.
Do you have five copies?
No. I don't own it. I don't think.
You should.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you should have
one.
I do. Laying around here somewhere. But the title track is probably the best thing on it, but it's over 10 minutes. So
yeah.
I was thinking you took the words right out of my mouth.
That's a good song.
I didn't want to do a ballad.
Recently played some Silverhead, More Than Your Mouth Can Hold. So.
Oh, perfect. Right? Now we need to get it out of the mouth.
Yeah, so.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
But this is apparently a concept album. As one of the things I was reading, it's like every song kind of flows into one another, telling the story of a guy who dies in a motorcycle accident, yeah. and his life is flashing before his eyes, mostly his romantic life, because he's talking about meeting this girl. This is track two on side one, so he's now flashing back, meeting a girl for the first time, and then the next one's Heaven Can Wait, where he's not wanting to die yet because he loves her. Third one is the first time he has sex with her. And then we flip it over on side two, and of course it's Paradise by the Dashboard Light. And then it's after that it's what is it? Two Out of Three Ain't Bad, I forgot. Yeah, when they broke up, and then he's
And then he goes full Phil Spector and shoots her.
Yeah,
and then he goes and then he dies. Yeah,
spoiler alert.
Oh shit, I shouldn't have told that secret last song, right? Ah shit.
So let's do this. You could tell it kind of feels like the parody that Todd Rundgren captured of Bruce Springsteen there, but great song nevertheless. Got a real Phil Spector thing happening.
speaking of Phil Spector.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Oh yeah.
So you took the words right out of my mouth, and let's go ahead and do it here.
On a hot summer night, would you offer your throat to the wolf with the red roses?
Will he offer me his mouth?
Yes.
Will he offer me his teeth?
Yes.
Will he offer me his jaws?
Yes.
Will he offer me his hunger?
Yes.
Again, will he offer me his hunger?
Yes.
And will he starve without me?
Yes.
And does he love me?
Yes.
Yes.
On a hot summer night, would you offer your throat to the wolf with the red roses?
Yes.
I bet you say that to all the boys.
Timeless record. That, of course, is You Took the Words Right Out of My Mouth from the great Meat and Company. 77 on Epic Records. Cleveland International was the group that finally signed him.
Doesn't, right? Who? Yeah. Cleveland, and where are they now?
Cleveland International. I don't know what happened
Cleveland?
To them.
They should have made billions. They should be owning jets.
They ended up suing Epic, if I remember, I read a little snippet about that. They sued Epic. Apparently, Epic took bigger share than what they should have.
Sure. If there's money involved, then
yeah,
there's going to be lawyers and lawsuits.
Things just went haywire after this album came out, right?
It was like
Meatloaf lost his voice, and then
from going wee counting his money,
I'm rich,
laying in a pile of coins.
Eating a coin?
Quarter got, you know,
he was hoping there was chocolate
down
on the inside.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, and him and Jim had a falling out and all this stuff. So it was just like a real one and done thing, of course, resurfacing in the 90s with that awful Battle of Hell 2. Okay. You know, that was as good as Jaws 2 was.
yeah, sort
maybe
of
worse.
The musical equivalent of...
More of a Jaws 3 or 4.
Oh, Chihuahua.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us here. All the mystery boxes are completely empty. I think we talked about, while that song was playing, maybe just spinning another Franck tune on the way out.
I say why not, right?
Which one did you pick?
It's the last track. I'm a life lover.
Okay. All right.
That's me.
Well, let's before we go, let's thank Liz Morgan for running the controls over there in the Shabby Command Center.
Thank you, Liz.
You're welcome.
Did you have fun over there?
I did.
What do you think about that Meatloaf album? Do you like it?
It's food for your soul.
Food for your soul. Well, that's a glowing Chris Gowian review there.
You know, Meatloaf with bread, I think, would be a nice combination.
And ketchup.
The band Bread.
Corn.
Thank you. Corn.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And corn.
Right, and corn.
Yeah, totally.
Fresh potatoes.
Got a full, and cream, maybe.
Cream. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's brought with her Sal 5000. What's up, Sal?
Kiss my entire ass.
Wow.
Then.
Nice to have you back.
She started off so nice.
You're calling her big.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we thank you guys very much for tuning in. 163 is officially in the books. Thanks for hanging out, going over to the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and clicking on that Amazon banner that helps us keep the lights on here at Shabby. It doesn't cost you a penny, but keep on doing some shopping. So if you want to pick up your copy of Bad Outta Hell or Franck,
yeah.
Plenty of Franck to go around. Steely Dan, all kinds of cool stuff out there.
Yes, that mother's.
Get some doll skin.
Dude, get yourself some doll skin, man.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's my record of the year nomination.
All right, Liz, it's March, April.
Okay. Gotta start somewhere.
Gotta say, I guess so.
I'm ready.
Okay, it's the record to beat.
Right? Yes. Yeah, you got to have a bar.
Uh-huh. That's right. Well,
speaking
there's one,
of, one right behind you. Yeah.
Well, the mystery boxes are empty, AD, so it's time for me to depart the wonders of Shabby into the dark streets of Spunny Slope, where the only difference between the hookers and the drug dealers is that the hookers can wash their crack and resell it the next day.
Oh.
But before I go, I bid a pond of goo to my pal and co-host AD Adams.
Well, that's right, Brian. Indeed, the boxes are empty. The lights are slowly dimming, and the booze troughs have been drunk dry. And old Sound 5000 is fresh out of circuit lube, so that means we gotta go. And remember, if you're still listening, then you're part of the problem. And speaking of part of the problem, I'd like to bid a bombed canoe to my pal and co-host, the both of them, Mr. Ryan McKay.
Oh, God.
What's the matter with it?
recently. Friends have been departing permanently, but not me. I plan to stick around, you see, 'cause I'm a life lover, that's me. Yes, recently, friends have been departing permanently, but not me. I plan to stick around, you see, 'cause I'm a life lover, that's me. Now all my parts work, my eyes and my nose, my hands, my fingers, my legs and my toes, and that makes me love life. Oh yes it does. I'm not gonna go away, I'm here to stay, because recently friends have been disappearing mysteriously, but not me. I plan to stick around, you see, 'cause I'm a life lover, that's me. Now it hasn't always been easy, folks. Sometimes I get real depressed too. Hey, but if I can do it, then every single one of you can do it too. 'Cause recently friends have been departing permanently, but not me. I plan to stick around, you see, 'cause I'm a life lover, that's me. Yes, recently friends have been departing permanently, but not me. I plan to stick around, you see, 'cause I'm a life lover, that's me. That's me. Oh yeah, I'm a life lover, that's me. I'm a life lover, that's me. Oh yeah, Frank's a life.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code Shabby at checkout and save 10% on your order. nameonanything.com.